There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
You nearly get right back into grinding and preparing for San Francisco, but did you take some personal time last night to enjoy this accomplishment along the way? How'd you spend the evening?
Had a cheeseburger and went to bed.
You know how to party.
Burgers for everyone. For many, Andy Reid, the sentimental favorite to finally take home the Lombardi. Today on NFL Live, which offensive philosophy will lead to a Super Bowl title? The Chiefs' high-octane passing offense or the Niners' punishing ground game? Will Tom Brady decide to play for a different team in 2020? Plus, which other marquee players could be switching teams this offseason? And as we continue to preview the best of the awards to be handed out the night before the Super Bowl, we'll weigh in today with our picks for Play of the Year. And needless to say, that will be a lot of fun. So anxious to get going here with Dan Graziano, Ryan Clark, Field Yates. I'm Susie Culver. Super Bowl about 12 days away. So what do you think we get started with that? The Niners and Chiefs will meet just north of Miami in what looks like an ultimate matchup. There's not much Super Bowl experience on either side. The Niners have had 8 different players appear in 10 total games, with Emmanuel Sanders and Richard Sherman each making multiple trips. On the Chiefs side, only Terrell Suggs and guard Stefan Wisniewski have played in a Super Bowl. Niners head coach Kyle Shanahan spoke on the importance of Super Bowl experience.
It's very important to go through all this stuff. I mean, it's you don't really know what it's like till you go through it. Our players got experience now of the playoffs. They're going to get experience here of the Super Bowl. And, you know, people will tell you all about it, but you got to go through it. I'm very thankful that you got 2 weeks to do it. I do think it's crazy when you get down there for the week. And that's what was nice for, you know, just growing up, watching my dad go through it a lot. And then being able to go through it myself with the Falcons. You got to focus on the task at hand, because once you come down there, get down there, it's hectic, and everyone wants to be taken care of and stuff. But we got a job to do, and that's what we're going to do. We're going in there to play in the Super Bowl, and which is a very important football game. And for us, we can't get caught up in an event. It's just the game.
And I really thought that lack of experience was going to hurt the Eagles against the Patriots. And since that didn't happen, I'm just throwing the experience out. So you played in 2, you won 1, you lost 1 with the Steelers. What do you think is the benefit of experience?
Well, I think the benefit of experience has nothing to do with the actual football. It's just handling what the week will be like. Because what you start to understand is the preparation is done while you're still at home. Because Super Bowl week is hectic and there is family there. And there isn't the comfort of being in your own home or your own facility where you can watch the film and do the studying that you're used to. So not only do you want to get everybody taken care of before the week starts, but you want to get the heavy lifting of your work, of your study, of your preparation done at home as well. Because there's nothing like Super Bowl atmosphere, the Super Bowl week, and also the media being around you and what you have to do from an obligation standpoint.
What do you think, Dan?
Something else Kyle Shanahan talked about yesterday that wasn't on there was his experience as the offensive coordinator in Atlanta a couple years ago. And he's taken a lot of heat, obviously. Everybody remembers Atlanta blowing that 25-point lead to the Patriots. And he talked about how, you know, some of it is justified and some of it isn't. But he did learn from that and apply it. He said this past Sunday to never believing the game is over. You know, he had a big lead in the second half against the Packers and continue to stay on the gas. So I think that you have an experienced guy in some extent in Kyle Shanahan, because he was such a prominent member of that team, and then that tremendous disappointment I'm sure that he feels from a couple years ago stays with him.
Ryan just mentioned the preparation getting done before you go. In some ways, the football is the easy part. Right? The football, you just got to go through the various elements of your game plan. Third down, red zone, 2-minute drill, situational football, first and second down, etc. But think about all the tentacles of the organization that are uprooting themselves for a week. You got the whole video staff. They got to bring all the things that they need to get them down and situated and on site somewhere. And certainly these teams had a confidence they'd be playing in Miami, but they didn't know for sure. You're going to have to figure out for the video equipment guys, the equipment managers, all the other people, the people that might be part of your food staff at your facility back home. Like, all of these elements are incorporated to the week down there in Miami. And what I tend to find happens is, in terms of whether the weeks leading up to it actually matter in the game, is after a game, if a team has lost, you hear a bunch of stories about how, yeah, they were distracted by this or that. When you win, no one ever talks about that. So I think it can matter, sure, but I think these two teams should, like, as much as it's different, they'll be fine.
Well, what largely happens, though, with all of that stuff, they just protect you from it. You know, like, you, it's like a parent. A parent can be dealing with all of these different things, but we make sure it doesn't get to the kids. And that's how these organizations handle all of the stuff that happens outside of the actual football field. They want players focused on playing football and doing the right things when Sunday comes, because you only get one chance to win it, and you have to do that within those 3 hours.
Think about how cold it was for the AFC Championship in Kansas City.
Yeah. Right.
Well, talk about planning ahead. Andy Reid has been pushing his guys for weeks to be ready for warm weather.
Yeah.
And they all kind of wondered why, but this was why. They've been doing extra running, extra conditioning to be ready to play in the warm weather. It seems to me that if both coaches have been through the experience, then it's kind of a wash.
Absolutely.
They'll push everybody in the right direction. All right, we'll be keeping an eye on injuries as we count down to the big game. Shanahan said yesterday about Tevin Coleman's dislocated shoulder that he doesn't want to speculate too much, but usually a week will allow him to get it back in place and rest, so he expects him to have a chance to play, but he said don't hold him to it. The Chiefs punched their ticket to the first Super Bowl in 50 years with another impressive come-from-behind win, and this time it was over the Titans. Patrick Mahomes was brilliant, but in South Florida, they will be faced with one of the most dominating defenses in football.
I got a chance to look at them. I spent the morning doing that. So I know they're a good, solid football team, and they play hard and aggressive. You saw that last night playing against a good Green Bay team. So they do a variety of things on both sides of the ball. They can run it. They can pass it on the offensive side. And on defense, they got a variety of things that they throw at you from a defensive standpoint. Solid on special teams. So all in all, it's a good football team. Well coached.
He hit it all. The Chiefs and Niners have gotten to the Super Bowl in completely opposite fashions. San Francisco has run the ball three quarters of the time, while Kansas City has passed nearly 60% despite having big fourth quarter leads in both games. And we have plenty of time to get to all the X's and O's, and we'll be enjoying South Beach next week. But Ryan, what do you think is more dangerous right now, the Chiefs passing game, the Niners rush game?
I think it's the Niners rush game, and not because the Chiefs passing game doesn't scare you with all of the pieces that they have. There's just sometimes schematically you can't be in the right place when you're playing against the Niners rush game. I mean, it's 3rd and 8 last week, and they decide to run the football, and they have an untouched touchdown by Raheem Mostert. These are the type of things that Kyle Shanahan and this offense has been able to do this year with multiple runners of the football, whether it's George Kittle, Mostert, Breida, Deebo Samuel. We've seen so many different people carry the ball. It's like a high school game, and you're playing against the wing T. You never know who's going to carry it or where it's going to come from, and that's scary to me. Other than the Baltimore Ravens, who have a unique chess piece in Lamar Jackson, this is the most unique and multi-dimensional running offense I've seen in a very long time in the NFL.
We're talking about two basically unstoppable forces, but I think I lean with Ryan with the 49ers running game being slightly more of a challenge because of the personnel the Chiefs have defensively. The 49ers defense, we know, is outstanding. And the Chiefs defense has been much, much better of late. And they were tremendous in the second half against Derrick Henry. I just think that if I were to say that the 49ers pass defense or the Chiefs run defense is a better chance to not shut down, but, and maybe not even neutralize, but just be slightly above average against the opponent. By the way, this no pitcher's duel in Super Bowl 54, right? This the over, whatever the over-under is, pound the over. I think it may be the 49ers pass defense because of their ability to generate pressure up front. There is no way to stop Patrick Mahomes. The best chance to make him look like sort of a human.
Don't let him get out there.
Is just like, you know, is pass rush him to the point where he and specifically
keep him on the bench.
It's confusion.
Never pass it
yeah.
into the 49ers.
Right. But it's confusion,
every
right?
Single play.
You got to confuse him. That's the one thing you can do to make Patrick Mahomes again semi-mortal. Confuse him.
That was Tennessee's plan.
Yeah,
and it didn't work.
No,
right? I mean, they were up 10 the week before. Houston's up 24. I mean, All your points are absolutely correct about the 49ers run game and how deceptive it is and how creative it is. But this weapon here that wears number 15, I mean, I just don't know how you're ever going to feel comfortable until the score goes final. I mean, if they don't blitz, he has the mobility to avoid a four-man pass rush, even one as great as San Francisco's. If they do blitz, you're going to have mismatches down the field with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and those kinds of guys. So I think this Chiefs passing game and then this element here where he can just do it by himself while everybody else is watching, I think that's not to be ignored here, because this is the difference maker in this game. I think with a lot of great players in it, there's no one playing at a higher level right now than Mahomes.
Yeah, that I can't argue.
There's going to be a lot of talk about Jimmy Garoppolo and if he's forced to have to carry the load. What about week 14 against the Saints?
Yeah, I was at that game.
350 yards and four touchdowns, toe-to-toe with Drew Brees.
And the 49ers will tell you. I mean, they'll say that they have faith in him, and that's one of the things they point to. They've seen that they're fond of saying we've won games in a lot of different ways, and that obviously is a huge example of that. Look, he hasn't had to do anything the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. People hold that against him, right? Which is unfair.
Which is so unfair. It's part of the game plan.
If you're running eight and a half yards a carry, you're going to keep running, and I think that Jimmy Garoppolo understands that. But you know, we'll see. I mean, if he has to do it, then I think they've seen enough that they believe he can.
Yeah, I agree. But that's the pressure that I believe Patrick Mahomes does put on teams, not necessarily just on your defense. He puts pressure on your offense. You can look at the Tennessee Titans, and when the Kansas City Chiefs got rolling offensively, it's hard to continue to say we're going to give Derrick Henry the ball when the Kansas City Chiefs are creating chunk plays. And so for me, when this game does get tight and when Patrick Mahomes starts to make plays, Kyle Shanahan, even with all the confidence in the world in Jimmy G, he has to understand what got this team to the Super Bowl, and that's the run and the play action. You don't have to out-duel him passing. You just have to put the points on the board to win.
Stating the obvious, maybe this is predictable, but this game, it's so close. It's so evenly matched. Two best teams in football, no doubt about that. Feels like a turnover decision game, right? If neither team has had a costly turnover on offense, obviously the Chiefs did have the muffed punt and the blocked punt for touchdowns against Houston. But these teams have been so good with the football. They have not had that critical unforced error on offense. That could be the decision-making play in this game.
Think about how much has changed for the San Francisco 49ers from a play-calling standpoint since Jimmy G's interception to Kendrick in the first half of the Minnesota Vikings San Francisco matchup, right? He throws that interception, they score. And so now we start to play and say, you know what? We may turn around and hand this ball off because that's something we feel is more efficient than making Jimmy G make some of these throws where you could have costly mistakes.
So much good stuff to get into. I don't think we're going to have a problem filling 12 days.
Not at all.
We continue here on NFL Live. Pair of Browns wide receivers in the news. What's the latest on Odell Beckham Jr.?
Odell Beckham Jr. underwent successful core muscle surgery earlier on today. Susie, that's the good news for the Browns. No timeline given on his recovery, but on January 21st, we're not so concerned with timelines for recovery. Obviously, we're about 3 months away from the start of the offseason program.
Dan, what about Jarvis Landry?
You know, Landry actually is concerned about timeline for recovery from surgery, which is why he's not having it. He was told recovery for a surgery that would help his hip would take 6 to 8 months. And he doesn't want to put next year's training camp in jeopardy, so he's going to rest it, believe he gets better on his own. He's not going to rest it that much, though. He's going to participate in the Pro Bowl Skills Challenge Wednesday. I believe that's on ESPN. ESPN app.
He's great at dodgeball.
On to the Packers, who came so close. Aaron Rodgers closed out a season of change, new head coach, new offensive system. Under pressure again by the dominant Niners defense, Rodgers turned the ball over three times, his most in a game since 2017. Back to the drawing board as he and Matt LaFleur work toward a more consistent offense.
The window's open, and I think we're going to be on the right side of one of these real soon. And that's the exciting thing. It doesn't make this feeling any easier, but that is very exciting moving forward.
And that leads us to panic or patience. So here we go, Ryan, the Packers championship window with Aaron Rodgers. Panic or patience?
I'm patient. And because that window doesn't have to last for the next 10 years, you just have to think that he can win one in the near future. And I believe he can. We watched this team mature and also become a more complete team. There was a running game with Aaron Jones. The defense was better this year with the Smith. They're not brothers, but we've called them the Smith brothers. Both Preston and Zadarius coming over in the offseason and also building with a young secondary. So I believe that this team has an opportunity to be in the hunt again next year. I'm patient, but I believe that Aaron Rodgers needs to panic. It's not the same relaxed type of atmosphere he needs to have. He needs to understand that he has to get better, that he has to take some chances. He can't hold on to the ball and worry about that interception ratio. He's going to have to be the guy that pushed the ball down the field and that was able to win Super Bowl 45. And if he does that, if he wants to become more involved in what this team has and what they do, I believe that Aaron Rodgers can lead this team back to the Super Bowl.
Guys on board with that?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Hunting for offensive weapons this offseason, specifically pass catchers, but it's Aaron Rodgers. Like, I hate the idea that after a 13-3 season, when people are trying to write the obituary for the Packers with Aaron Rodgers. Like, I think I take my chances with the all-time greats.
And then don't underestimate that it'll be his second year in a new offense as opposed to his first, and there's no question that will matter. The run game obviously got going this year. You'd expect the passing game to take another step forward.
As for the other team that lost on Championship Sunday, Titans running back Derrick Henry is scheduled to hit free agency. Henry rushed for 446 yards in the postseason, the highest single-year total by any player since Eddie George in 1999. Recent mega deals for running backs have not gone well. Four players at the position are making at least $13 million per year. Ezekiel Elliott was the only one to rush for 1,000 yards last season, and none of the four saw their teams make the playoffs. Field, if the Titans sign Derrick Henry with a long-term big-ticket contract extension, then panic or patience.
If it's that kind of money, we are panicking, Susan. Yeah. You helped paint the picture already with those four top-paid running backs and how little value they returned relative to other players. Raheem Mostert, the guy who just ran over, around, through the Packers' defense, making $3 million per season. And I apologize to Derrick Henry because he was amazing. We all enjoyed this run. But at the end of that game against the Chiefs on Sunday in the fourth quarter, down multiple scores, you know where Derrick Henry was? Watching the game from the sideline. He is an incredible back. He is the best runner right now in the NFL. That's how he performed this season. But it's really hard to sustain success at a running back spot when you're making top dollar and a team builder like John Robinson for the Titans has to say to himself, if I can reallocate those resources elsewhere, like maybe we could add a couple more defensive playmakers. They've got other pending free agents like Logan Ryan in the secondary that are essential to their roster success. I just think if I'm the Titans, I'm drawing a line in the sand. You can't be emotional. He was incredible this year. But running backs at the top of the market have not equated to great success. You can tell me I'm crazy, though.
I'm not, actually.
Oh, good man.
Just listening. And I think you're going to look at the Ezekiel Elliott contract. You're also going to look at Todd Gurley and Le'Veon Bell, who throughout the season, we've heard his coach kind of double dutch with the fact that he even wants him on the team. And so I think if you're the Tennessee Titans, you have to be very wary of the deal you get him. You give him, but you would like to sign Derrick Henry and have him on your roster next year.
And it's going to continue to be an issue. Guys like Christian McCaffrey coming up. Melvin Gordon's hitting free agency. What do these deals look like, and how do running backs start to get paid?
Very intriguing. All right, on we go. The Browns made former Vikings offensive coordinator Kevin Stefanski their new head coach. That means five of the last six Browns head coaches have been first-timers. None of them have lasted more than two seasons in Cleveland. Dan, Browns hiring their fifth head coach of the last decade. Panic or patience?
I'm going to be patient. I kind of like the idea of Stefanski and where he comes from in Minnesota and the number of changes that happened while he was there in terms of different coaches, different players, different quarterbacks, different offensive systems. He seems like a guy who's a product of a lot of different influences and has learned to work in a variety of situations. And I think that sets you up well as a head coach. I'm sure he'll have things he wants to do his way in his own program, but I also think he'll be better than his predecessor at sort of, you know, delegating things and knowing what he doesn't know. And I think, you know, I think he's a good head coaching prospect. We're going to be patient. At some point, someone in Cleveland will get this right.
I'll be patient for now, but this is not just Kevin Stefanski. This is the Browns organization. Decide how you want to lead this. Decide if you want to get serious about winning and allow people that you hire to do specific jobs to do those jobs. If not, then we'll talk to you in a year or two. We'll have the same conversation, another segment. I'll wear the same outfit just for consistency's sake, because that's how it is, right? I mean, that's five times in the past decade. Five in the past decade.
Well, they are consistently looking for new coaches, and that's what the Cleveland Browns do. And I think you have to be patient because you have to give Kevin Stefanski his chance. You can't say just because it hasn't worked up to this point that it won't work for him. But he does have his work cut out for him. And you understand, in coming into that organization, you don't just have to get the X's and O's right. You have to change a culture. And I think that'll be the first thing he's charged with.
To your point, Dan, he's been a quarterback's coach, a tight end's coach, which is big, running backs, and the hiring of Bill Callahan as assistant head coach is big.
It's important.
Who his coordinators will be, that's going to be huge. One of the most intriguing stories this offseason will be the future of Tom Brady, six-time Super Bowl champ, 42 years old. Brady will become a free agent in March, and the Patriots cannot use the franchise tag on the 20-year veteran. TV 12 was asked Sunday if he views it as a realistic possibility that he could play for another team.
I'm open-minded about the process, and, you know, at the same time, I love playing football, and I want to continue to play and do a great job. So I'm looking forward to what's ahead. Whatever the future may bring, I'll embrace it with open arms.
Brady is part of a loaded free agent quarterback class, which includes the likes of Drew Brees and Dak Prescott. Ryan Tannehill, Teddy Bridgewater could also cash in after starting the season as backups. Other big-name free agents on offense include A.J. Green, Amari Cooper, and Derrick Henry. So, Dan, we asked you to rank the top five offensive players who are likely to change teams. So go from five to one, and as we get closer to one, those are players you consider the best players and the most likely to
change. Yeah, best players who have a chance to change teams. Right. The likelihood varies from player to player. But let's start here with Teddy Bridgewater, you mentioned. Back up to Drew Brees in New Orleans. I'm assuming Drew Brees comes back and plays another year. I think that's the most likely outcome. Teddy Bridgewater, who won those five games when Brees was hurt this year, likely wants to go somewhere and try his hand at being someone's starting quarterback. And there are going to be openings at the quarterback position in several places this year. So I would think that Teddy Bridgewater is a guy who moves on and tries to build his own career after a couple years as Drew Brees' backup.
Really interesting. He does seem like a rare quarterback that, while starting is alluring to him, he really appreciates the opportunity he has in New Orleans, in part because of all that he's gone through with that traumatic knee injury a few years ago.
How about number four?
Number four, I'm going to go with Melvin Gordon, running back for the Chargers. We mentioned him earlier. We talked about running back contracts. Obviously, he didn't like the contract he was on this year. Held out of training camp, held out the first couple games. He's going to be an open market free agent. I sincerely doubt the Chargers sign him after all that went on there. But where does he go and for how much? Obviously, an explosive player who's been very productive, knows how to get into the end zone. But as we mentioned earlier, teams don't like a running back.
And I think he saw that as well. He thought that if he got an opportunity to get on the market, that people would love him, or he tried to be traded. And it just wasn't that type of market for him. And he wanted a certain number from the Chargers last year. I don't expect them to give it to him this year.
And I'm not sure anybody will, but I think he'd probably leave.
Number three, most likely to be on the move.
Well, let's stick with the Chargers. I mean, we had reports from Adam and Mort over the weekend about Phillip Rivers moving out of California, and I think the Chargers are ready to go in a different direction at quarterback. So Phillip Rivers, a veteran who's never won a Super Bowl and wants to and still believes he has some good years left, probably tries to latch on with another team. Where? Hard to say. Well, is there an opening in New England? Is a place like Indianapolis or Tennessee want to try him out if they feel like they're this close to a Super Bowl and maybe he can help them? But I think Phillip Rivers probably wears a different uniform for the first time next year.
I can't even imagine. I mean, not that it won't happen.
No,
it's hard to imagine Phillip Rivers ever wearing a uniform other than the Chargers. And it's hard to imagine a quarterback besides Phillip Rivers playing for the Chargers, because since he became the starter, he has not yet missed a game. He is as durable as there is in the NFL.
Well, I think if you're the Chargers, you know what that story looks like. You've read it for the last decade and a half, and I think now you want to move on from that and find a new quarterback or even just start over. So I think for Phillip Rivers, he ends up in a new place. It will be interesting to see what type of team thinks that Phillip Rivers can be their starting quarterback, because I don't believe if you're trying to rebuild or you're playing with young guys, that's the dude you want to go with at that position.
Okay, I'm a quarterback away
from
getting
to
the Super Bowl, and this is a guy who's a veteran that we can count on. That's probably what you look for. I like the forgotten guy, right? A.J. Green, okay? Didn't play this year, so he's fresh.
Somebody's
going to be getting a fresh player. This has been a top-level, number one wide receiver throughout his career, and while he's a little bit older now, I still believe he can perform at that level, and I think he's going to be a hot commodity on a market where a lot of teams are looking for more weapons in the passing game. I don't know that he fits into the Bengals' plans as they rebuild, and I'm not sure he necessarily is going to want to be there for a rebuild. So look for A.J. Green to try his hand with a contending team.
I mean, isn't that the setup? You look at this season, he didn't play at all, so he can definitely go into someone's office and say, listen, I'm a top-level talent. We all know what I can do. And I'm super fresh. These legs have not been used. I feel like a peppermint. And so if you're AJ Green, you're looking for somewhere where you can go and compete. You've spent a lot of years in Cincinnati not having an opportunity to win games, to win Super Bowls, or to even play in the playoffs for that matter and win a game. So if you're AJ Green, you want to get somewhere with a proven quarterback, a proven offensive system that has a chance to compete for a championship.
Zach Taylor, the Bengals head coach, has said that he is a top offseason priority to resign, perhaps the franchise tag. But if he's not resigned, I will go directly to you, Mr. LSU Ryan Clark. Would Joe Burrow downgrade in passing game options from LSU to a Bengals team without 100%. AJ Green?
100%.
That's crazy.
It's not even because I love LSU the way that I do. I'm not saying that the LSU wide receivers are better than pro wide receivers.
They might be.
I'm saying as compared to their contemporaries, to their peers, to the defensive backs that they were facing, there will not be that large of a gap once he gets into the league. But for Joe Burrow, it worked out well, and it's going to end up landing him at the number one overall pick.
And would Joe Burrow be a way to convince AJ Green to stay there?
Listen, all I know is he's taken a step down in striped cats. That's all I know,
boy. You know, in fairness to the Bengals, they did make the playoffs in his first 5 years.
They win a game.
I understand that, but he's played in playoff games. It's not as if they never won any games there in Cincinnati since he's been there. You thought it was weird to think about Philip Rivers wearing a different jersey. How about this guy?
Yeah.
I mean, this is the big one. This is the offseason. Until he signs somewhere or decides to go back to the Patriots, this is the story of the offseason. Where will Tom Brady play? Will it be back in New England? If they can get number two on the list to sign there, maybe it increases the chances number one on the list going back.
That's a great point.
Right, he needs some more weapons. A guy like A.J. Green maybe helps convince him to go back and maybe think it could be a little smoother on offense than it was this year. But he's going to be a free agent. It sounds like he wants to be a free agent and go through all that comes with that, including hearing offers from other teams, considering what it would be like to play there, what are the contracts going to look like. And I know it's a dicey time to be a Patriots fan, but wait. But
here's what's crazy. I was just looking at Tom Brady's numbers on the screen. Would any quarterback in the world with those numbers be a coveted free agent? Think about that. He was in the bottom third in mostly everything, but it's Tom Brady. And so if he has an opportunity to be on the market and you start talking to teams, they're going to be excited about having somebody like that in their building. Robert Kraft said he wanted him to either be a Patriot or retire. It's because he understands if Tom Brady plays next year in a different uniform, you're going to have to barricade streets in New England. You're going to have to stop traffic because there will be a riot.
Yeah, scorched earth poor. We would call Tom Brady wherever he plays next year if it's somewhere besides New England. It's National Squirrel Appreciation Day. Fun facts you get only on NFL Live. And Julian Edelman, nicknamed the Squirrel. Yeah, I saw it on the internet. Must be
today,
right?
National Squirrel Appreciation Day.
I mean, who amongst us hasn't previously celebrated it? But Julian Edelman, as reported by our colleague Adam Schefter, recently underwent shoulder surgery. No concerns about him being unavailable for the start of the off-season workout program, which he is a regular participant in. Doesn't hurt when you got a big, fat off-season workout bonus. But Edelman,
he was the only player
that was great for the Patriots and the receivers group this year.
Yeah, I'm about to say, he was the only guy it seemed like Tom Brady was comfortable counting on, so they better make sure he's back. But I agree with Dan. They have to go out and get him some help. And if they could get number two, I would even want to go play quarterback in New England because that guy's a baller.
By the way, you mentioned Brady's stats. What about the six?
No, that stat counts. But that was my point, though. When you're going into an offseason, many times people look at who you are, right? They look at who you are and who you can be for the future. If you're going to bet on Tom Brady, it's going to be on who he was in the past because as a player, even in winning the Super Bowl last year, Tom Brady wasn't the type of guy to carry a team.
By the way, if anyone's wondering, this isn't because I think these players are better than all these players. It's just I think a lot of these guys aren't going anywhere.
Gotcha. Okay.
You have to explain yourself to people,
you do.
Dan.
Sometimes you do.
Yeah, you can do whatever the heck
sometimes
you want.
Sometimes people jump to conclusions.
That's your freaking touchscreen.
They're wrong. Sometimes.
Back to the NFL, and looking back at the Chiefs' journey to Miami, Kansas City won 12 games for the second straight year. earning a first-round bye after the Dolphins shot the Patriots in Week 17. They fell behind 24-0 in the divisional round, but stormed back in the fourth-largest playoff comeback ever. And the Chiefs overcame another double-digit deficit on Sunday, with Mahomes accounting for 4 touchdowns in the win over the Titans. When Patrick Mahomes takes the field on February 2nd, he'll be the 5th youngest quarterback to ever start in a Super Bowl. And if the Chiefs win, Mahomes will join Ben Roethlisberger and Tom Brady as the only quarterbacks to win it before turning 25. 30 teams coveting what the Niners and Chiefs have accomplished. So let's talk about at least some of them in our NFL Live notebook and field. Let's start with Dean Pease, his second retirement, right? The Chiefs are so good, it forced him out of the game.
Well, it sounds like this one's for finality for Dean Pease. Such a great defensive mind, but he's stepping away after time with the Titans, previously the defensive coordinator of the Patriots and Ravens. He's had college head coaching stops. 47 years in coaching, what an incredible life for him. And 2 of his final 3 games are victories over Tom Brady and Lamar Jackson during outstanding defensive efforts. Congrats on an exemplary career. Kerry Coombs, their defensive backs coach, also left. He is now the new defensive coordinator at Ohio State.
Dan, latest on the Browns GM search.
Yeah, reports out of Cleveland indicating that Vikings assistant GM George Payton is on their list coming in for a second interview. Very interesting name, obviously, because you know Kevin Stefanski, their new head coach, comes from Minnesota. They've been clear, they want a coach and GM combination that they know can work together and be on the same page. This would be that. We'll see if he ends up taking the job.
I feel we touched on this earlier.
Yeah, Bill Callahan headed to Cleveland to be their offensive line coach, as Dan, I believe, reported previously, such an important part of the staff. He's been a great offensive line tutor, a guy that did an excellent job in Washington as an offensive line coach. Actually, if you look at a player like Eric Flowers, really stood to benefit from Bill Callahan's tutelage this past year.
And Dan, in Carolina, Matt Rhule continues to build his staff.
Yeah, Phil Snow, the defensive coordinator, he's been with Matt Rhule the last 7 years, first at Temple and then at Baylor. He joins the Carolina Panthers staff, which is a very inexperienced coaching staff NFL-wise. He had a couple of years as a linebackers coach for Detroit about 12 years ago. But, Matt Rhule, the head coach, not a lot of NFL experience. Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator, not a lot of NFL experience. And Phil Snow, the defensive coordinator, not a lot of NFL experience. So we'll see how they put it together in Carolina.
Sounds like maybe at the quarterback coach position, they add some of that NFL experience. There's been a couple of names tossed out.
It seems like there is sort of a blended staff here, right? Which I think is probably natural to expect with the Panthers, given that Matt Rhule does have a little bit of a pro background with the Giants during that year. I believe he was the assistant offensive line coach.
Assistant offensive line
Coughlin
coach.
At one time. Yes.
Well, we've seen it's been done before.
Yep.
Optimism. Let's talk defensive free agents. Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll said impending free agent pass rusher Jadeveon Clowney informed GM John Schneider that, quote, he loves it here and would like to re-sign with the Seahawks. Clowney, as we know, played through injury to generate a ton of pressure off the edge. Also played really solid run D. Here are the top defensive free agents compiled by Kevin Seifert on ESPN.com. Hopefully your team is looking for help along the D-line. The top 6 on this list are all edge rushers or DTs. The top-rated DB on the list is Cowboys cornerback Byron Jones. Ryan, this is all you. Take us through some of these notable defensive free agents who you think are moving, and if it's your team, would you keep these guys?
All right, let's just start with Yannick and Doc Wave. I'm the Jacksonville Jaguars. Let's see how this works.
There we go.
This is a guy I keep. One, he's a great player. He's a guy who's produced for the Jacksonville Jaguars over the last few years. Also, Jacksonville is now making a statement that they're a team that doesn't keep their own. Jalen Ramsey is gone. Dante Fowler Jr. is gone. There were so many huge pieces that helped that team get to the AFC Championship 3 years ago that are no longer there. At some point, they have to make a statement and a claim that they're going to keep their good players at home. I also feel that Jadeveon Clowney is a guy that the Seattle Seahawks should keep. Since coming over there, he has been a dominant player. And it's not necessarily just about the numbers. It's about the disruption that he has caused. He's dropped back in coverage. He's played the run. He's also rushed the passer. We know what type of elite athletic skills he has, but I think it was the buy-in to me in Seattle that was important. It was him
seeming like one of the leaders on that team, and also saying some of the things that he said already that's coming before the free agent period starts.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I guess they had promised him that they wouldn't franchise him, though I don't think that's necessarily in writing. So I'd be interested to see what the deal, both these guys, what's the deal, right? How much do they want to make? How much do they want to cash out? Clowney, we saw maybe a comment indicating that other things might be as important, but we'll see what happens when the price comes in.
Yeah, okay, so for me, we go from the front end to the back end. Now we're with Byron Jones. This is more so like, this is where I like to live, in the secondary. And Byron Jones, you don't have to let him walk. You can actually let him run. This isn't a guy who turns the ball over. When you look at elite cornerbacks and the cornerbacks now that change the game, there are guys that can get the football. You think about your Richard Shermans, your Chris Harris Juniors, who we'll get to down the line, Tre'Davious White this year, Stephon Gilmore. These are all guys who, even matched up against number one wide receiver talent, get the ball and get it back for your team. Byron Jones hasn't done that since becoming a part of the Dallas Cowboys. And even though he's a good cover guy, you don't necessarily want to pay big money or top-notch dollar for that.
Better in 2018 than 2019. And, oh, by the way, the Cowboys have to pay a couple of other players, including Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper, which could combine, seriously, on an average annual basis, for over $50 million if they come in the top of that market at their respective positions.
Yeah, I mean, I would expect them to. If they both re-sign in Dallas, you're going to be paying top-notch dollar for those players, and keeping Byron Jones probably won't be a priority. Matthew Judon, I know we heard a lot about Baltimore and what they were doing offensively. He was a huge piece to what Baltimore had become defensively, especially down the stretch. He was a guy who put pressure on the quarterback. He played the run. He also added a physicality to the front that Baltimore needed to match what they did offensively. He's one of those pieces on the defense that you keep not only for their production, but you keep them to have the continuity, to have the consistency, to have the chemistry that led you to the divisional playoffs this year. I believe he is just as important as any offensive player is to the Baltimore Ravens, aside from Lamar Jackson.
I think with Matthew Judon's sack production, he probably feels he deserves to be paid at or near the top of the market. And if that's the case, does Baltimore go there, or do they continue their own pattern of drafting and developing replacements for guys that want to max out?
And I know this seems strange that I went keep all the rushers, and I'm probably going to say let all the pass defenders in the secondary go. But I believe Chris Harris is a guy you let walk. Chris Harris is going to want top dollar. He's getting up in age, but he's a guy that's played the nickel position. He's played both outside corners. He's traveled. He's stayed inside. So he's shown you that he can do it all. He is a guy who gets the football, a guy who has clamps. But at this age and where he is in his career, you're not expecting to give Chris Harris a long-term deal, which is what he is going to want. Since coming out as a free agent, an undrafted free agent in Kansas, he has been a top-tier corner. If you look at the numbers, he's a guy ranked with the Richard Shermans, even the Darrell Revis type of career numbers. But right now, he's not a guy who can be part of the foundation for the future. Let him go to a team that's a contender. I'm sure that they'll want him, but it will be on a shorter deal that he probably wants to have, especially from a team like Denver, who I'm sure he feels owes him.
Well, and then there were teams that were calling about him during the trade deadline process, which made you think that they were at least open for business. And for Denver right now, it feels like the nucleus could be shifting from defense to offense in some ways. Drew Lock, Cortland Sutton, Noah Fant, some of the young offensive linemen they have. If that's the case, you know, maybe defensively, they feel like their key cogs are their two pass rushers, Von Miller and Bradley Chubb when he's healthy. And they just sort of find out ways to draft and develop in the back end, which they've done a traditionally very good job of.
And it's definitely, it's a different regime there. So I don't necessarily know if they will still have that eye for evaluating talent and developing guys. But it just feels like Chris Harris Jr. no longer fits into what this team wants to do and will be better served himself to go somewhere else that's a contender and a better defense.
I just can't believe that Ryan Clark always wanted to be a defensive lineman. This is what we've learned today.
Well, I always wanted to be a pass rusher for sure. I just wasn't very good at it.
I was wondering that too. Yeah. Maybe we could analyze Ryan just by...
Yeah, we'll do a whole thing on the psychology of this. Keep the big guys and
because,
these guys you can find on the
because
screen.
Because what Ryan Clark knows is these guys... Help Ryan Clark do his job much better because, listen, you can rush the passer, you can cover the pass, and those the guys do an excellent job of that.
And Ryan Clark's been on the move himself.
That I absolutely have.
Yeah. With ball caps. And the question is, who will be the leading man in the Super Bowl this year? All week long, you've got center stage, so who's up first? Dan, who do you believe will be the leading man?
Mahomes. I think all eyes
That's
are on Mahomes.
Too easy.
It's too easy. It's too easy for a reason. This is the big superstar of the game. Everything he does all week will be watched closely.
Bam!
Right through the end of it.
I'm going with San Francisco and Kyle Shanahan. This is a man who has already been there. A lot of people blame him. I'm sure he still can't go to Atlanta. He's going to be on notice all week.
Give me George Kittle. Oh, by the way, when did you become a Chiefs fan? Brad Pitt, you're a Saints fan. You're a ride or die. Apparently, no longer.
Call him out.
George Kittle, run, pass, so Beckham.
I could have done Kittle, but I'm going to go Kelce because he already took over the interview on the field. Remember when Jimmy G and then almost took Jim Nance's microphone away on the stage. All right.